Big show for you here today. Andy Behrens joins to continue our Flip the Script series, looking at who's going to be this year's Jordan Love, the top five quarterback that nobody saw coming. And man, do we have some interesting names to go through today. We're talking, Sam Darnold. We're talking Deshaun Watson. We're talking Will Levis. Spoiler alert, those aren't the guys that are going to win. Wait till you hear who Andy thinks is going to be this year's value quarterback after he nailed it with Baker Mayfield last year. Enough. No more talking. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, June 25th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
Things are good. It's been a while, man. You're refreshed, back from vacation. You've never been more bright eyed and bushy tailed. So this should be exciting. We got some really terrible names to talk about today, and I'm excited to get to them.
Yes, Andy is right. I did just get back from a wonderful, I would call it like a long weekend as opposed to maybe a vacation. I feel like a vacation. I've got like hard standards on what is and is not a vacation, simply taking off like a Monday of a weekend and Friday too. I don't really necessarily consider that a vacation, but I do consider it a great trip. Shout out to Portland, Maine. First time I've ever been there. My wife and I took a great weekend trip up there. And as Andy is mentioning, God, what a come down from like, man, I did nothing but drink wonderful beers and eat lobster, literally didn't have like one even mediocre meal all weekend. What a freaking come down to then be reminded that, oh yeah, I've got a podcast on Tuesday, not with Andy, which is, that's great, but the subject of the podcast is we're continuing our Flip the Script series. For those new to it, we're essentially looking back at last year's biggest surprises and kind of trying to find this year's version of it. And our task today, Andy, is who will be this year's Jordan Love? Which, I mean, hey, talking about Jordan Love is super cool. Love talking about the Packers offense. The problem is that we're trying to find this year's version of that. And essentially that is a quarterback that kind of no one was drafting with any certainty last summer, and he suddenly becomes a top five pick. So we have some really, really rough names to sort through here today, Andy Behrens.
Yeah, so number one, this is not guaranteed to happen, right? Even though this has basically happened in each of the last couple of years, we've got like some wild surprises in the top five at quarterback. This is never a lock. Absolutely never a lock. So this is definitely one of those questions where there might not be this year's Jordan Love, right? Like, it happens all the time. We should probably expect that. And number two, producer Colin, when he pitched different shows, like, hey, Andy, which one do you want to be on? I enthusiastically chose this one because I thought we might be able to, you know, dive into the quarterbacks in that 14 to 20 range. Those guys are really fun names. And then the one role that Colin threw down in the show notes was, hey, by the way, we have to talk about guys outside the top 20 because that's where Jordan Love fell. And I was like, man, you slammed the door on Caleb Williams for me. You slammed the door on all the fun ones. But hey, if there's anything that is really home base for me fantasy wise, it is bad quarterback. So I am here for the bottom third of the league quarterbacks.
Well, listen, we have to give you credit as kind of like the guru on the subject, buddy, because basically last year's version of this show was who's going to be this year's Geno Smith, right? And you emphatically made a case for Baker Mayfield, and I think I basically laughed you off the show. Multiple people, you know, slammed you on Twitter. I even remember our colleague Charles McDonald was like disgusted when we posted the video of it. You had the last laugh, buddy, because Baker Mayfield was QB10. He wasn't exactly like a fantasy league winner, difference maker, any of that stuff, but he certainly was a much more productive quarterback and the correct answer really to this year's Geno Smith. So we are expecting you to go 2 for 2 on this exercise here, Andy. So the pressure's on.
at some point, Charles had actually asked for, you know, I think Charles threw out on Twitter this question about like who's going to be some sort of surprise player, or quarterback. I forget what it was. And I literally answered, this was like preseason last year, I literally answered with a series of things that Baker Mayfield miraculously accomplished, like, you know, Baker Mayfield Pro Bowl quarterback and division winner. And I might have even said he was winning a playoff. It was crazy. It's wild that Baker did that. We'll see if we talk about Baker again today.
I know that's the thing. Baker is eligible for this conversation. So, okay, let's jump into it. Like Andy said, Colin, I didn't even know this was a rule until Andy let me know, because I didn't think about this podcast or open this doc one single second over the weekend. Okay, so
that's good.
I was like, oh, we got to talk about the quarterbacks outside of the top 20 in expert consensus rankings. I'm going to just go ahead and say, Andy, if we want to include Matthew Stafford and Aaron Rodgers, I think that's appropriate. QB 20 and 19. I do think it is inappropriate to consider Jaden Daniels at QB 14, Caleb Williams at QB 15. Feels a little bit too much like the no one saw it coming. I mean, Dalton's been talking about how right. Jaden Daniels is basically QB 5 all summer already. So like, and that's going to continue to happen. But anyways, before we jump into that, we do have to talk about Jordan Love's rise. You know, kind of what clicked, how did it all really play out well to the point that, you know, yeah, Jordan Love was the QB 5 in fantasy last year. He threw for 32 touchdowns. He had over 4,000 yards. He also chipped in with a little bit of rushing as well, 247 yards on the ground and 4 touchdowns, 4.9 yards per carry. So Andy, Jordan Love, how did this season that, you know, there wasn't a lot of hype or optimism for him coming into the year, how did this all play out?
Number one, the Bears certainly helped, right? He got his season started off on a positive note with a 3-touchdown game against the Chicago Bears. Probably the worst defensive effort that the Bears, you know, there's quite a competition for worst defensive effort of the Bears season last year. But that, man, the week one was really something. There was a play in which Love actually like dropped the snap, took a couple dribbles, and then still found like a wide open Luke Musgrave downfield, I think it was. And Musgrave might have fallen down too on the same play. And none of it mattered because they were just clowning the Bears. So the Bears certainly helped. It's actually like, as you go back through the game log, I was reminded of what a wild season it was, because there, you know, there's a moment at the midway point last year where the Packers are like 3-6. And Jordan Love threw, you know, he only threw 11 interceptions on the year, but he threw 10 of them in the first half of the season. And there's a real moment where if you're a Packers fan, you're like, oh man, what is the future of the quarterback position? And you probably had a moment last year where you were wondering if we needed to draft this position again. And then of course,
I remember a few Packers fans I know photoshopping Caleb Williams into a Packers jersey. I remember those.
And then he finishes the season flawlessly. Like they had some bad losses too, right? Like you go through the game log and it's like they lose to the Raiders, they lose to the Broncos. They you know, there's a later season loss to the Giants. So like some of the losses hung on that team were really terrible. But he's near perfect in the second half of the season. I think only throws one pick, drops in a couple of 300-yard games, and then in the playoffs, you know, the Dallas game was just an absolute. They mauled them. And pretty credible performance against a tough Niners defense too. So there's a ton to feel good about. I do feel like in the second half of the season, you know, I'm in a tough spot here, because like if I say anything that is remotely critical, then I'm just a Bears fan homer. And it's not that. I do just want to point out, like, this is true across all sports. It's true in the NFL. It's true in basketball, baseball, everything. Like, we're, you know, athletes are basically never as good as their best games, nor as bad as their worst games, right? And the truth is always kind of somewhere in the middle. And I don't, you know, I think it's fair to say that that the second half performance from Jordan Love, in which, again, he throws one interception down the stretch over many games, like 8 games, that's probably not reflective of exactly what he's going to be moving forward, right? He didn't just like in November figure out the NFL fully. I thought, you know, instances where the ball might have been put at risk, he didn't get burned by it, right? Like there was a little bit of good fortune, but also he was just, this is kind of a maestro most of the time. And the depth and talent of that receiving core really came to the surface too. Like they have they have two really good tight ends. They've got, you know, obviously a good backfield that they've shuffled up a little bit. But man, we've talked about it before. The depth in that receiving room is crazy. And it's not that, you know, I don't necessarily think that like Watson and Reed are, you know, wide receiver ones. They're not, maybe they haven't figured out like that elite number one receiver thing just yet, but they go like six deep with guys that you would not be afraid to play. And they go six deep with guys who would be, you know, certainly the fourth best receiver on the Bears right now and would have been the second best receiver on last year's Bears. So it's just an incredibly deep receiving room. How do we even get Dontayvion Wicks on the field? That guy's great. That guy's awesome. Like they have potential stars that are like third, fourth receivers right now. So a very impressive collection of talent that I didn't necessarily see coming. And then obviously the way that Love finished the season was tremendous.
Yeah, you're right to point out that it wasn't smooth sailing for Jordan Love throughout the entire year from a statistical perspective. If you look at his end of season results in terms of EPA per dropback, he was fifth. And that was kind of true throughout the course of the season. Now, from a success rate standpoint, passing success rate, he's 13th, which that gap was actually wider in the early portions of his season. Because you remember that Bears game, of course, three touchdowns, no interception, week two. Three touchdowns, no interceptions against the Falcons, who actually were a pretty good defense. And, you know, people were pointing out that, yeah, that EPA is high because the big plays were there, you know, long touchdowns, the critical rushes and stuff like that. But the down to down consistency, which is more of like what success rate measures from this metric, that was not quite there yet for Jordan Love. So and then that sort of normalized then. Against the Saints, against the Lions in their first meeting. You mentioned that Raiders game was really horrific. But then it was funny, Andy, because even though the results didn't quite catch up yet, when you look at games like, and these are all fresh in my mind because I just recently did like Jaden Reed and Christian Watson and Dontayvion Wicks all for reception perception. And like you look at the Broncos game, you look at that first Vikings game, especially then the Rams and the Steelers game, to me was the one where it was like, okay, this offense isn't quite like, by the way, they lost all but one of those games that I just rattled off there. The results weren't there from a team perspective. The results were not there from Jordan Love from a fantasy or a real life statistical sort of lens yet. But when you watched him play, you could start to see like, oh man, he can make basically every throw. He's starting to figure out sort of that timing and rhythm of the offense. And I say this all the time when talking about the receivers, but you mentioned all those dudes are good. They're all super young. And like Matt LaFleur, who I think is a really good coach, and I think really proved his worth last season, is kind of like white knuckling at the press conference, trying to not throw these guys under the bus. Right. Because he's like, this offense is designed well. And like my quarterback is actually playing well, but you know, these guys are 2 yards off their route depth, or they're running the wrong route. And you know, Christian Watson is a total mess at the contested catch point. They hadn't quite figured out what to do with him yet. And then it did start to normalize there throughout the course of the season. So really, I think that midway point right around week 10 is where I remember he's coming off a game where they lose at the last second. It's a close loss to the damn Steelers. He completes under 55% of his passes. He throws two picks. But I'm like, he's playing well though. And then that was when the receivers started to get in line. They started to figure that out. I think also taking Christian Watson out of the number one receiver role and kind of spreading things out really helped Jordan Love. That's not to say that like Christian Watson is bad or anything. I just think they were kind of over reliant on him. So once those young dudes started to catch up, once I think Love just figured out from like a down to down consistency standpoint, that is when to me we really started to see him take off.
Yeah, and it's you know, again, as I look at the game log now, you'd think these were two different players entirely. Just looking at the results, you know, first nine games versus the final eight. You know, so many of the early season games, completion percentage below 60, you know, there's no big yardage performance. You're right. You're right that there were several like splash plays in there that sort of made the final numbers look a little bit better than necessarily like the play to play experience. And then, man, we hit November, and I don't know, maybe the Chargers were just the team that got a lot of teams right last year.
Yep,
but they hit that Chargers game. Yeah. And it's just a string of multi-touchdown performances. Again, he throws one interception over the final 8 weeks. There's no like there. That's, you know, there's a little bit of good fortune in something like that. But man, that's incredibly clean football. And then he also just enough rushing ability that it matters a little bit in fantasy. Right. And it gives him that edge over, you know, guys like Matt Stafford, who aren't going to run at all, Tua, who's not going to run at all, right? Like it's just enough that it matters a little bit for fantasy purposes. Just incredibly clean performances down the stretch. I'm still a little bit scarred by, like, I don't even think he had a necessarily a big game, but like what Dontayvion Wicks was able to do against Bears defensive backs, yep, like in the final game of the season is just sensational. Like they have more options in the passing game than they know what to do with. So I do think that this is going to be one of those teams. I don't know. Maybe this is the year for Christian Watson, but I kind of feel like this is going to be one of those teams where the safest way by far to invest in this passing game is through Jordan Love, and we're just not going to know which receiver is going to pop in any given week.
So just because you mentioned, I did want to actually read off the box score, like from weeks one to nine. So the first eight games of the season, 59.6% completion rate, 12 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, 6.15 adjusted yards per attempt. That's like, yeah, that you're getting the Caleb Williams photoshops. Like I said, at that point, that's not great.
Yeah.
The final 8 weeks of the final 9 weeks, excuse me, of the regular season, 68% completion, 20 touchdowns, 3 picks, 8.48 adjusted yards per attempt. And then obviously, like, those numbers that I just read off were pretty much what he did in the playoffs too. 8.65 mm-hmm. adjusted yards per attempt, 67.3% completion rate. So yeah, it was really a tale of two seasons. And I think that's instructive for talking about him coming into this year, Andy, because like you said, maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle there. But if it's somewhere in the middle there, that's a very good starting quarterback. And to me, I lean more towards the pot. Like, I think just because of the experience he's getting and the ecosystem that he's in, I lean more towards the positive side with Jordan Love specifically. But I hear your point that, like, maybe he's not. I think he's definitely not the player of the first 8 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
But again, 8.5 adjusted yards per attempt, that would make him, like, kind of near that elite quarterback territory.
Yeah, I really should have said somewhere in between, because I'm not suggesting that we just split the difference and he's, you know,
right,
he's the exact middle between his first half and his second half. I definitely think it shades toward what we saw in the second half of the season. Again, like, he got like those are really good defenses that he faced in the postseason too, and he still looked like, yeah, a great quarterback. Like there wasn't anything fluky about that. And I'm sure obviously Packers fans love himself disappointed about the way the season ended in what was honestly a winnable game against the Niners. But to be able to, like, you know, go punch for punch with the Niners was plenty impressive based on, again, where we were on Jordan Love in October. Just a while, you know, the great bit of coaching, like, you know, you tip your hat to LaFleur for you know, the player development experience there, the receiver development experience there. Like, I don't know, that team just got better. Like, that's just absolutely great coach. That is coach of the year stuff right there.
I agree with you. So 8.5 adjusted yards per attempt would put him third in the NFL last year, ahead of MVP Lamar Jackson. It would put him just behind, like, Brock Purdy at 9.9 and CJ Stroud at 8.7. So yeah, I think that's the sort of ballpark we're hitting in now with Jordan Love, because yeah, of everything that you said. It was a great coaching experience for Matt LaFleur last year, and I think that that's why I believe that this can be sticky. And I think that, look, if one, like, let's just say one of those receivers has kind of, I mean, this is what happened last year. One of those receivers has kind of a letdown season, right? Like Christian Watson, he didn't get off to a good start last year. It's like, and he starts missing time. It's like, oh well, we've got all these other guys to throw at it. Yep. I think that makes me even more bullish on Love this year. But so just sort of to recap before we start kind of discussing about this year's candidates, I think what we learned from Jordan Love is, number one, the absence of evidence is not negative evidence, if that makes sense, right? Like, we hadn't seen him play a ton. That doesn't mean that he was not good, right? Especially in his specific circumstance where he's playing behind an MVP quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. You know, they started to kind of let that out, that, like, oh yeah, him missing minicamp that last summer was, or the last summer that Rodgers was there, was kind of the reason they started to get more and more bullish on Jordan Love is, oh yeah, we're starting to see more and more in him from a practice standpoint that we think he could be ready for this. So the absence of evidence is not necessarily negative evidence. I think also projecting growth for young quarterbacks is going to be important when we talk about these next players, at least to me. And then the final thing is, I mean, I say it all the time. I've already said it, and I'll say it again. Ecosystem matters so much, right? Like, the way that they were able to scheme things up in Green Bay last year, and they with LaFleur kind of, I think, having a little bit of the shackles taken off with Rodgers being gone and allowing him to do more of just what he wanted to do on offense, that mattered. But like, just those layups that Jordan Love would get with Jaden Reed or even Watson at certain, like, again, I'm not trying to bang on Watson here, but taking that guy out of the offense, who he was being used in kind of a way that I didn't love, where it was like all downfield stuff, and then like, oh, our featured player is Jaden Reed on these like layup targets, that made things so easy for Jordan Love, and I think helped him pick up the momentum down the stretch to then like, oh, he's pushing these high degree of difficulty throws to Dontayvion Wicks and Romeo Doubs in the playoffs. That confidence building, I think, is important. So to me, those are kind of the three things we're looking for when we're projecting who is this year's version of Jordan Love.
He also, to Love's credit, you know, Aaron Jones is one of the best receiving backs that we've seen in the last like 10 years, and he didn't have him available for much of the season, right? So those would have been, you know, the numbers that you get via Aaron Jones are just cheap and easy yards and completions, right? And that was not, I'm sure that was part of the first half story as well, right? Aaron Jones missing a ton of games, and even when he played, he was compromised and seemed like he was on a snap count and all that. So, and then Jones was great at the end of the season, certainly great in the playoffs too. But playing without him, who was surely going to be a foundational piece of the offense, you know, those were significant headwinds early on.
All right, so we've kind of set the parameters here with Jordan Love. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll start to run through our candidates as to who can be this year's version of Jordan Love right after this. All right, we're back. Andy, let's slog through some names here. I'm just going to throw it to you first. Who is your first candidate as to who can be this year's Jordan Love?
My first candidate, and this feels a little bit like cheating because he's actually already been a, he was the previous year's Jordan Love. I'm going to go with Geno Smith. He's been the QB5, right? That actually happened. It's wild that it happened, but it wasn't like, you know, we could have ended up having a similar conversation regarding Jordan Love. Like, it wasn't fluky. Like, Geno made some superhero throws a couple years ago. I think it was fine last year. Like, I certainly don't think that Geno Smith was the biggest problem with the Seattle Seahawks last year. Far from it. One of the recurring themes I think in the list that I will give you here is also quarterbacks who are tied to great receiving cores, and just the possibility that, you know, these receivers can help elevate a quarterback a little bit. Again, we've already seen it with Geno. He's kind of got that Jordan Love thing where there's just enough rushing capability that, you know, it's a positive for him in terms of fantasy profile. Again, he's the guy who gets to throw to DK, he throws to Tyler Lockett, he throws to JSN. They're kind of running it back with the same cast. I don't know exactly what the offense is going to look like, right? It's going to be the University of Washington offense from the year before. And it sure sounds like there's not a lot of holdovers from last year's offense and from the previous regime too. They're not, you know, all new terminology. It seems like it's wholly different. But again, the supporting cast in Seattle is outstanding. And Geno certainly over the last couple of years has legitimately looked like a good quarterback and not somebody who's just kind of, you know, still lucking into some big fantasy lines. Like, he's been really, really good. So since he's already done it, since he's put a 30 touchdown, 4,000 yard season on his resume, we know he can get back there. And again, it's a great cast that he's working with.
Yeah, he was going to be one of my top candidates as well, because I agree with a lot of what you just said there, which is, this receiver room is still very good. Lockett might be declining a little bit. I think we can definitely say he's in the back nine of his career. He's kind of on that slope at this point. DK Metcalf's still really good. He never really graduated into kind of that elite tier of NFL receivers, but I'd say he's probably still a player that's on tier two to me. In terms of like a number one, probably in that superstar level that I think hasn't really been maximized the last couple of seasons, even though Geno had this great year a couple years ago. You know, there was some kind of meat left on the bone, certainly last season for DK Metcalf. But man, he's a perfect fit for this offense. Like, and that's, I think, what's really interesting about this is, yeah, that it's definitely leaning into the unknown with the Ryan Grubb whole situation. But when you watch that offense, which I did a lot of because I worked on all those receivers, it's just they're pushing the ball downfield. It's a very vertical offense. And when you look at like some, I mean, shoot, you look at like the Texas offense last year with those receivers and how kind of gimmicky and very collegey Mickey Mouse stuff that they did there. And then you look at what Washington was doing. Not all of that is going to map to the NFL, the way they're able to kind of stress you out from a full field vertical perspective. But a lot of it does, from a concept standpoint, from a protection standpoint. A lot of it looks very NFL-esque, and especially if they're just going to run a vertical drop-back pass game, which I think when you look at Geno Smith and what he did in 22, it was a lot of just straight drop-back vertical stuff. It wasn't really, as much as Shane Waldron comes from the McVay tree, it wasn't a lot of that type of wide zone play action boot stuff. It was mostly like big boy drop back concepts. And I think that, again, looks a lot like what Ryan Grubb did at Washington. And because of that hire, it's the reason that, and some of the, and the receivers, of course, I haven't mentioned JSN, but I think he was better as a rookie than people kind of, than the stats sort of give him credit for. And I think he could be further maximized as an intermediate threat in this offense. Because of those things together, I have found myself pretty high on the Seahawks passing game in general, which of course has to trickle down to Geno Smith.
Yeah, I'll probably feel this way until he retires. But part of me just always thinks that there's the possibility of a, like, just an absolute league-winning supernova season from DK Metcalf, and maybe a little bit of that is just that he has athletic traits that are rare, even in the NFL. Like, just an absolutely special athlete. Maybe it won't happen in the first year of this offense, but it does seem like it's as good a fit for DK as maybe anything we're going to find. And he's just so, I don't know, that the guy is just different from most receivers. I don't know that it'll ever happen. I don't know that we'll really get like the 1400, 1500 yard, 14, 15 touchdown season, but man, it feels like there's at least the possibility of one of those out there, and this might be the best setup. This is a weird team because they have a lot of continuity, and then they don't, because they have, you know, again, entirely new system, entirely new offense that can, you know, that can be a bumpy ride, especially in the early months of a season. So there's a possibility that a season ends up game log wise looking a lot like Jordan Love's, you know, 2023, where it's a little bit rocky early, and then they really get their footing, and then it's great. But I am probably going to be irrationally bullish on Metcalf when we actually get into draft season.
You know what's interesting with Metcalf is that he's a little bit, it's funny that he is like physically, you know, an outlier, right? But I also think he's a little bit of an outlier in like kind of today's elite receivers, at least, right? Huh. Because he's kind of like the last of maybe a little bit of a dying breed, in that he is a pure traditional X, right? You're not going to do some of the stuff that certainly like the Dolphins do with Tyreek Hill, or even like what AJ Brown can do. And like we've seen Jamar Chase do more of this stuff too, where they're getting him away from kind of that perimeter position, and they're lining him up in the slot. They're doing kind of like, let's throw screens to him. Let's kind of get him run after catch opportunities. And really it's sort of that work, like what CeeDee Lamb does with Dallas, which is like just dominate from the inside and kind of get moved around to exploit mismatches. At least to this point, we have not seen a coaching staff do that with DK Metcalf. He's just been outside on the line of scrimmage, and he runs a more diverse route tree now than he did as a rookie. And I think he's always been a better route runner than he's given credit for. But I think that's sort of the reason that when you just look at these, like the top receivers in the league, like, yeah, Davante Adams and Justin Jefferson, they play most of their snaps at X receiver. So does like a guy like Jamar Chase too. But at the same time, it's not exclusively at that position, where I think Metcalf, like I said, kind of the last of a dying breed. That's basically where he lines up almost every snap. And I think with Lockett and JSN on the field, it's hard for me to kind of see him being moved out of that position, at least.
Yeah, I was going to say that's kind of the thing with DK, right? He's always been paired with another receiver who can line up, can line up anywhere, can be dynamic from the slot. I mean, Tyler Lockett has been the equal of DK Metcalf, fundamentally different player, but statistically and ability wise, has also been a sensational receiver. So that that closes some doors for him, right? He hasn't been that sort of movable chess piece in the offense to the same extent as other great receivers. And I don't know that we'll see it. I just think that there's at least a possibility that the offense can really take advantage of some of DK's rare traits. And I think there's at least the possibility of I don't know if it ends up being a top five positional finish, but I'd give Geno certainly a puncher's chance at 30 touchdowns and 4,000 yards again.
Yeah, I really like him in this like QB2 range. And again, current expert consensus rankings from Fantasy Pros, he's QB23. I think like if you can take him there, I love that, in a best ball draft and in kind of the QB2 range, I think he's got a lot of upside if all of these things sort of come mm-hmm. together. Just before we move on from him, he was going to be one of my candidates too. So if you're cool with it, Andy, I think we can go and push him into the finalist bracket here in one of our top threes. But before we move on, let's just address this. Like, we haven't said the name Sam Howell, and I don't think we really have to here. I like Sam Howell as a player, like him, but I think he's more in that sort of backup quarterback range. I don't think that they traded for Sam Howell to push Geno Smith. Now, if Geno comes out and plays poorly, yeah, it gives them like a real alternative to turn to, and then kind of Mike McDonald and this new coaching staff can start to assess like, all right, let's just get a look at Sam Howell. Let's see how it goes. But I don't think there's any real, like, I think Geno's going to play well this year, and I think as long as he plays well, there's no kind of reason for them to turn to Sam Howell. I just think we should address that because there does seem to be kind of like a weird idea that, oh yeah, Sam, like, Geno's going to get benched for Sam Howell.
Yeah, no, you're right to bring him up. I think Sam Howell as a guy that you bring in the building and see if you can fix some of his obviously bad habits, I think that's fine, but I can't imagine that he's somebody that they envision actually, playing a whole lot over Geno Smith in the current season. I just don't see any way that happens.
Yeah. I would say that the one thing that has me kind of hesitant about Seattle overall, and the reason I think a big reason I think that Geno kind of sank a little last year and what could sort of sink this whole, the upside of this vertical passing game, blah, 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 is that, this interior offensive line is maybe not great. Yeah. I'm not putting Sam Howell behind an offensive line where the interior offensive line is not great. Right. I don't think he's going to come in there and prove a tangible upgrade, but Geno definitely needs to be one of our top three finalists. I like moving him into that bracket. I'll throw out another name here, ironically, the guy who's going right after Geno Smith or is ranked right after Geno Smith, it's Will Levis from the Tennessee Titans. I think he checks a lot of the boxes that we are talking about for this exercise, which is one, kind of the upside of the unknown. That was certainly present with Jordan Love last year as a younger quarterback, but somebody we'd seen a little bit of, right? We've seen a little bit of Will Levis. We've definitely seen more of him than we probably saw of Jordan Love heading into last year. You laughed at my comparison of him being this era's Jameis Winston. Sounds like a great archetype for this exercise, right? Like a random top five season. And it God, does, man, yeah. the more I've thought about the Titans, why I'm thinking about the Titans in June is, I do get paid for this. I guess that's probably why. But the more I think about Tennessee, it's just they are set up to have a pretty nice little incubator for a young quarterback, right? They've got two, I'll say, good receivers, two guys that probably aren't at their respective peaks anymore in DeAndre Hopkins mm-hmm. and Calvin Ridley, but verified like good starting receivers. They've got depth with Tyler Boyd. They've got Chig Okonkwo, who I haven't fully given up on yet. And is Brian Callahan Matt LaFleur? I don't know about that, but I think he comes off of a good situation in Cincinnati. I like a lot of what they did sort of in the back half of last year, troubleshooting the offense and setting it up for a different quarterback other than Joe Burrow. I don't know, man. I think that the situation for Will Levis is pretty good. And I think Will Levis showed he showed something last year, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I considered Will Levis. He wasn't like in my list of three. But I definitely thought about him because obviously they, you know, you'd like to see a team generally do some things to improve the offensive environment around a young quarterback. They definitely did that. Tyjae Spears, is one of those, you know, is just thinking about it with Aaron Jones. He's also a great source of like cheap and easy yards. He had a wonderful season last year. Ridley, definitely an upgrade, even if he's not like vintage Calvin Ridley. It's hard to get that. It's hard to get that Hopkins game out of your mind from last year, right? Like Levis showed off the arm, a bunch of deep shots to DeAndre. Like that was really fun. You can definitely see the traits that intrigue the NFL with Will Levis. I don't know that there's, I don't know, there's not really rushing upside here necessarily, right, although yeah. I think he did have like a pretty good rushing season in college several years ago. But there's not like that rushing bump that we're going to get here. So I didn't ultimately put him on my list, but I can, like, I don't know. The NFL has done weirder stuff to us than cough up a big Will Levis season. So, like, you know, could I see him finishing, you know, because you want to give pretty healthy projections to both Ridley and DeAndre, assuming good health all season. And if, like, I don't know, it's probably pretty easy to get to 25 or 26 touchdowns with Will Levis. I definitely think that's in play, probably with a healthy number of interceptions as well. But, you know, if you can get to 25, 26 touchdowns, you could probably luck your way into, you know, four or five more. And once we're brushing up against 30, now we're really talking about a fantasy relevant player. So I wouldn't rule this out entirely. He just didn't make my final list.
He probably, I think, could have a stat line a lot like Matthew Stafford last year, who threw 24 touchdowns and 11 interceptions, 92.5 passer rating, obviously didn't give you anything as a rusher. That's good for QB 15 in fantasy, which is a little more realistic, I think, than top five quarterback. Yeah. But that season I can very much envision for Will Levis. If he's good, right? If he's, well, I don't even know if he needs to be good, right? He just needs to be a viable starting-ish fringe NFL quarterback. And that
you,
I do
if
think
if you
is,
play 17 games with good receivers, like you can squeeze into the top 16 and we're like, huh, how did he get there? Yeah, happens.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to put him as a finalist, but he was, I think he fits this archetype really well. So I'm fine discussing a few other names before we settle on a different set of finalists here. But he's someone that I've got on my short list to move into the top three if you are not too opposed to it, or unless, I don't know, man, because some of these other names are gross. So go ahead and give me your next candidate here, Andy.
Well, my next candidate is was last year's candidate to be the 2023 Geno Smith. I'm going to go with Baker Mayfield. And he's probably more in the Will Levis club, where I can't, you know, do I really see a path for him to finish top five? You know, probably not. But the receivers are great, right? Mm-hmm. And we have year-to-year continuity here, which we like. You know, Mike Evans back. Mike Evans never misses. Sounds like Chris Godwin is actually going to be playing. You know, he'll be back in the slot, which he like curiously wasn't last year. Probably going to play most of his snaps from the slot this year, which is obviously it's been. You know, he's great wherever they want to line him up. I think Godwin's a great player, but he's had obviously some remarkable seasons in 2022, 2021 as sort of that primary slot guy. So it's probably the best use of him at this stage. So that's good. We like Kate Otten. There's just a lot to like here, and Baker, of course, coming off, you know, 4,000 yards and 28 touchdowns. And played through injury for much of the season, and injuries that, you know, were clearly causing him a pretty significant amount of discomfort and limited mobility and all that. So if we actually got like a healthy season out of Baker, and he managed to find his way into the end zone as a rusher three or four times, which is always possible, he could certainly sniff the top 10, if not the top five.
Yeah, I wasn't going to come in here and make that case for Baker Mayfield, but just be like, I think you said all that extremely well. And the more I think about it, like I look at just again, expert, you know, anytime I say expert, I'm always with the air quotes, but consensus fantasy rankings right now, there's kind of, at least on Fantasy Pros, there's a tier three where, you know, Kirk Cousins and Trevor Lawrence are in the back end of that tier three. And then you go to tier four and it's Stafford, Rodgers, Watson, and then Mayfield at 22. I actually don't think really there's that big of a difference between Kirk Cousins and Baker Mayfield. Like, what? Why are we more from a fantasy perspective? Why are we? And honestly, I mean, maybe even a little bit of a real life perspective. I don't know. Why are we that much higher on Kirk Cousins than Baker Mayfield at this point, who I think played really well last year? There wasn't a ton of flukiness to the results. He was elevated by good receivers, especially Mike Evans. For sure, but like Mike Evans is still there, as you mentioned, and yeah. I agree with you. Chris Godwin can win anywhere. I think Todd Bowles even said this. Like, Chris Godwin can play anywhere. He can win outside, but he is maximized, sort of like we talked about those receivers earlier when we were discussing DK Metcalf. Like, some of those receivers, CeeDee Lamb, AJ Brown, like, they can all win outside, duh, but they're maximized as matchup nightmares in the slot. And I think Godwin, especially at this point after some serious injuries, that's probably even like 5x the case for his specific situation. So really like that. I will just say, do you have any concerns about the offensive coordinator change over here? Obviously, Canales, who, you know, is at least labeled as he's the connective tissue, the QB survivor, the QB resurrector here between Geno Smith and Baker Mayfield. There's a connective discussion here. He is now obviously across the division in Carolina. Liam Cohen comes in from the college ranks. He's been kind of ping-ponging between college and the Rams, where obviously Baker Mayfield played in that 22 Rams offense. So any concern with Liam Cohen taking over here for Dave Canales?
And I guess I would say that any concern is sort of overridden by the fact that personnel-wise, they're running it back with such a similar cast, right? Like, I just like situations like that. And this is, you know, this is also the price of success. And it's not like Baker Mayfield has never dealt with, you know, new coordinators before. That has been part of the story of his career, right? So I'm not panicky about it. And I to an earlier point that you made, like, anybody who thought that there was something flukish about his season, I mean, they had a good playoff run, right? Like, they get a win over the Eagles. He plays really well. And then they kind of gave it to the like they gave the Lions a good game. Didn't Baker have like 6 touchdowns in the postseason? Like, it was a really good postseason run from him. So anything that, you know, if you had reservations about him coming off the regular season, you thought maybe it was a little bit inflated. I just think his postseason performance should have put that to rest. Like, he had a legitimately very good year. I mean, it was a Pro Bowl year. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't all pro level. It wasn't, it didn't, you know, really, really scare any of the top 5 quarterbacks in fantasy. I don't think he gets there, but I can absolutely imagine him running it back with roughly the same season, maybe a couple more touchdowns.
Yeah, there could definitely be some improvement. A little bit of meat left on the bone, certainly from Chris Godwin's season perspective. Over 80 catches with that touchdown total. You don't expect that to happen again. I can see it. I think I'm cool with making him, you know, a potential finalist once we discuss a few other names. It's just like, these are Geno and Baker Mayfield, and maybe Will Levis gets in it. These are kind of the contracts for Geno and Baker are very similar. They're the middle class kind of quarterbacks right now in the league. And sometimes circumstances come together like it did for Geno a couple of years ago. And, you know, maybe Baker a little bit less so. Just kind of circumstances come together. They have a few random rushing performances. Like, they just pop in a few goal line touchdowns. I think Tampa Bay is going to run the ball better this year, which is a good thing for Baker Mayfield as well. Those circumstances come together and they end up being a QB1 in fantasy, or like not even just QB1, but like a legit, you're glad you're starting this guy on a near every week basis QB1. Mm. That's sort of the group that we're talking about here. I'll throw out a guy that, I mean, I'll just be the one to do it. I think we have to talk about Sean Watson as a potential this year's Jordan Love candidate. He's just not played well. Like, it's been so long since we've seen him play well. And I don't care if you want to cherry pick a few plays here and there from certain games last year, but on balance, he is not, like, from a consistent standpoint, he has not played well in a Cleveland Browns uniform, period, full stop. I think that there are good and bad things you can say about the supporting cast this year. They have certainly added Jerry Jeudy. I don't know how much better Jerry Jeudy makes them. I think he gives them another viable option. There's a lot of talk out of OTAs that Cedric Tillman is really showing out in the absence of Amari Cooper, that he could maybe even be the number two receiver over guys like Jerry Jeudy and over Elijah Moore. And I think that's potentially possible because Cedric Tillman was a good collegiate player. And that's like a pretty deep group. Okay. That's like if Tillman emerges, you've got four receivers there that I think are viable, like number three or better receivers, which is good, but it still is a pretty good ecosystem in terms of pass catchers. But man, what I just can't get out of my head, Andy, is that I just never at any point thought that what Stefanski wants to do is really that good of a fit for Deshaun Watson. And I think a lot of that is why they brought in Ken Dorsey, former Bills offensive coordinator, because the Bills were sort of this spread and shred attack under Ken Dorsey. And ultimately, I think that's what Watson needs. Get him an empty, throw out all of these different receiver options. You have two potential difference makers in Cooper and Njoku, and then you've got what I'll say are like nice auxiliary pieces in Elijah Moore and Jerry Jeudy and maybe Cedric Tillman too. So if that like works out, if that vision comes together, I think Deshaun Watson could be a QB1. And he's, let me say this, he is set up to be a QB1 in fantasy. The problem is that he's not like a Jordan Love or even a Will Levis where, ooh, it's the upside of the unknown. It's sort of this, and he's not even really like Baker Mayfield or Geno last year where it's, man, we've just not seen this guy play well, but maybe the circumstances, blah, blah, blah. Like there's a universe where we've seen Deshaun Watson actually play at this caliber in terms of performance, but it's so long ago. So I kind of talked in a lot of different directions there about Watson because I can see what the Browns are trying to do. But the vision has never been quite like, it's been a little oil and water in terms of what the offense was when it was good last year or exciting and fun to watch under Joe Flacco and Kevin Stefanski to what I think Watson needs to do well, but they kind of have the personnel to do it. So Andy, again, I am talking a lot of different directions here. What is your thoughts on all this?
Well, I mean, you have to with Deshaun, right? Because he's had now basically two different careers and a clear line of demarcation in the middle. The reason that he belongs in this discussion, obviously, is that he has he's already been a top five quarterback. He has led the league in passing. He did it at age 25, right? And it wasn't just like some volume thing. He also led the league in yards per attempt, yards per completion. It was a legitimately great season in 2020 before like everything we thought we knew about Deshaun Watson like crashed to the ground. We also know that he's got pretty significant rushing upside, more than any of these other quarterbacks that we've talked about, so that's technically in his game. And like, you know, once a player has shown an ability to do something, once they've displayed a trait, you know, he's not old, so like there's no, like, he should be able to get back there. It's just that every day that goes by, we're further and further away from that. And the concerning thing, of course, is that, well, you know, number of concerning things, like 2022 was a big concern. But we can't, like, the extent to which last year looked exactly like the prior year, you know, statistically, is remarkable. He played the same number of games last year that he played. We all agree that he was trash in 2022. Last year, he played the same number of games. He played six games. He threw for 13 more yards. He had terrible completion percentages both seasons. He had the same touchdown percentage. He threw one fewer interception. But like the yards per game were within, you know, 2 yards of each other. The rating was bad. Like everything was the same kind
yards
of
yards per attempt, 6.5. I mean,
it was the same bad season. They went 5-1 in those games, but that wasn't like because Deshaun carried them to anything. Like it was great defense and, you know, the circumstances being what they were. He just didn't show enough last year to make me think, oh yeah, he got a little something back. You know, on the other hand, it should encourage me that Joe freaking Flacco was able to step in and deliver huge weeks in that offense. Like if he could do it, surely there's a path for Deshaun Watson to do it. Because again, Deshaun is, you know, he's like entering his age 29 season. He's, He should be in his absolute prime as a quarterback right now, but his prime was, you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. So it's, we can't rule out the possibility that Deshaun gets it back, because he's done it, and he did it at a, at an early age in his career. He just didn't give us any reason to think last year that, oh wow, we're in for a huge leap.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I'm really stuck on the player, because, and it's the, but it's all the other stuff that makes me want to consider him for this, because Matt LaFleur, coach I like, ecosystem I like, mm-hmm. same thing with Kevin Stefanski here. We talked about those Packers receivers as, man, okay, one guy's kind of injured or letting you down. We've got a lot of other answers, and I think that's definitely the case in Cleveland. Like, I think that's a potential four deep receiver room there, and they have a really good tight end. And the run game is a little bit more of a question mark, because we just don't know what we're going to get from Nick Chubb this year, or I think, you know, maybe potentially, unfortunately, ever again in his career. So that kind of sucks, but maybe he is at some point, you know, comes back late next year. I don't know, but it doesn't sound like he's going to be the same Nick Chubb, at least early on in the season. So There's a lot of good environmental things for Deshaun Watson. It's just that he has not been a consistently good quarterback at any point the last 2 years. And really since, I mean, shoot, like COVID year or whatever. So it's been a long time since we've seen him, but I think he's worth considering. So when we come to our finalist list, we can maybe, you can debate that a little bit more. But Andy, and any other names you want to throw out here from our luminaries that you want to consider?
Yeah, the last name. Well, I'll give you names. I'll give you a combo platter.
Okay.
Let's talk about the Sam Darnold, JJ McCarthy combo platter.
Oh boy.
A complicated discussion, right? Because I don't know that, you know, seems like probably Sam, I don't know if this will really happen, but maybe Sam Darnold starts the season for that team. There's a, you can tell yourself a story about when he's going to lose that job too, right? Because it's, it is a tricky road in the first like 5 weeks of the Vikings season. I'm not Mr. Oh, look ahead at the schedule and we know exactly what's going to happen. But man, they get the Niners early. They get the Jets early. Like, they face a couple of really difficult defenses. They also have the Texans and Packers on the schedule. So it's not, you know, you look at the way their schedule opens, they could absolutely be 1-4 going into a bye. And then that's a pretty natural point to bring in JJ McCarthy. Part of me also wants to, and maybe this is just that Sam Darnold had his reputation kind of laundered by the Kyle Shanahan experience last year and all that. But like, part of me really does feel like, man, talk about a quarterback who was dealt a brutal hand at the start of his career, not just in terms of like supporting cast with the Jets, but like the coaching staff, right? He, you know, you're dropped into an Adam Gase situation early on. You've got, you know, terrible protection. You've got the Le'Veon Bell weirdness going on around you. Like, it was a bad circumstance. Sam Darnold also showed a little bit of rushing upside in the Carolina years. Not that the Carolina years were so great. And we see this occasionally where it's just, you know, this was a little bit of the Geno Smith story where you're a journeyman and we've written you off, and but there was always talent there, and maybe that rises to the top when you are paired with Justin Jefferson, when you are paired with Jordan Addison, when you've got Aaron Jones in the backfield and you've got pretty good environment around you, and obviously a coaching staff that showed last year that they can make it work with some really sketchy quarterbacks, at least for certain stretches of time. And then I'm long term, I think I'm pretty optimistic about what we're going to get out of JJ McCarthy. He's clearly not a finished product. He's very young, but if he takes over in the second half, we've got some friendlier matchups for them. I don't know. Like, you could actually use your last two picks in a draft on both of these quarterbacks and lock up the quarterback situation that is tied to Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. And maybe that's, I don't know, maybe that's probably not a top five season, but maybe it's enough to get you through a year.
Okay. So I really wanted to laugh this off at first, but I'm remembering what I did last year with the whole Baker Mayfield experience. And I think that the funny thing about the Baker thing is that if you look back on balance throughout the course of his career, I was really caught up on how bad he looked with the 22 Panthers, where he was legitimately the worst quarterback in the league from a statistical perspective, from an efficiency perspective. But that was kind of the outlier of Baker Mayfield's career. I was too hung up on that season because for the most part, like rookie season, 7.5 adjusted yards per attempt, second season, 6.2, but then 7.7, 6.6, even with the Rams, 6.5. And then he's 7.3 last year. So him being a sort of somewhere like around the 20th best quarterback in the league. And then, you know, again, circumstances surrounding cast, you can have that kind of statistical season. I was too stupid and hung up on the one Panther season to kind of let that go. Weirdly, if you look at Sam Darnold's career, who has no question been worse than Baker Mayfield when he has played, weirdly, that 22 Panthers season is actually the outlier for Sam Darnold, because once Baker Mayfield was off the roster, they kind of messed around with PJ Walker for a little bit, but they kind of figured out this identity under Steve Wilks where they were running the ball really well and they were just kind of having the quarterback make very easy cookie cutter throws on the back of a good defense. Sam Darnold had 8.2 adjusted yards per attempt that year. He was, from an efficiency perspective, a top five quarterback in that little weird pocket of this Panthers season. And I think that the Vikings do present a situation that's probably better than that, right? I think that their offense, they have a great play caller in Kevin O'Connell. I think Brian Flores did some wacky, weird, and wonderful stuff with that Vikings defense last year. Now they probably have better players. Could that defense take a step forward? You know, Aaron Jones in the run game, all the players on offense, you know, but it's still Sam Darnold, right? So I don't know. I don't want to entirely rule this out, especially because you're kind of giving yourself a fallout option of, okay, well, if Sam Darnold gets benched, just everything I said transferred to JJ McCarthy, and at least he presents you that upside of the unknown. So I'm not dismissing this out of hand, Andy Behrens, because I'm a man who learns from my past mistakes.
The problem is I kind of had to go with the combo platter here because I felt a greater degree of confidence that Baker was just going to keep that job, for better or worse, was going to keep that job last year and run with it. There is a very clear path for Sam Darnold to lose this starting job. And I'm sure at some point they want to get to JJ McCarthy, right? So like this season has to begin well for Minnesota, or you can absolutely see how they hit the eject button and they switch to the rookie quarterback, because it is a really difficult road early in the year. Also, to your point about Sam Darnold's, like, his early career has not been as good as Baker's early career. Like, he's been crazy inaccurate by NFL standards. Like, he only has the Jets years and the Carolina years. There's only one season where he was even over 60% in terms of completion percentage, and that's nowhere near where we want a quarterback in this era, right? Like, so he has not been accurate. You can forgive a lot about the Jets experience. We'll see. I don't believe in him as like a sort of middle tier starting caliber NFL quarterback in exactly the way that I did Baker. I would still want to see it. And he's got a tough road earlier in the season. This is more a reflection of how I feel about O'Connell generally, how I feel about that receiving core. Like, it's just, you know, you project Justin Jefferson and it's really hard not to give him, no matter who the quarterback is, it's hard not to give that guy 1200, 1300, 1400 yards, 100 catches. Like, once you account for the talent of that receiving room, it's really hard then not to give the quarterback position pretty significant totals.
Yeah. Look, I think it was worth a mention just because there's so many Darnold sickos out there that are still like hard. This guy is actually secretly great, but I mean, he might not even start the damn season, you know? I think correct. If McCarthy has a good summer, Sam Darnold will get 0.0 playing time this year. So I think it was worth a mention, but I'm not dismissing it out of hand because there are some boxes that you could check here for Sam Darnold and / JJ McCarthy. But we'll see what happens. And McCarthy, yeah, there is some rushing upside with McCarthy, which would make him a pretty easy candidate for this award. Okay. Mm-hmm. Andy, the rest of these names, I don't know that I'm definitely not ready to make the case for Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. Maybe you are. I am not. I think these rookies like Drake May and Bo Nix are probably not ready to rock. I'm not saying nothing about the damn Raiders quarterback tandem. I'm not doing the Daniel Jones thing again, okay? Talk about learning from my past mistakes. I'm not doing the Daniel Jones like fantasy hype again, because Daniel Jones isn't good at quarterback, and like that, I should have put more emphasis on that one thing, saying like, oh, he could be a great round pick last year. So the only two guys I'll give a passing mention to, we don't have to have an extended discussion because I feel like we've kind of weirdly talked about them a lot on the show lately. Derek Carr, Saints offense, I do think he's going to get a boost from the coordinator change. And he's a guy that we've seen. I don't know his top five fantasy quarterback upside. I don't know that he has enough weapons to do that there, but I am intrigued by Rashid Shaheed. I'm intrigued by A.T. Perry, and I think Chris Olave can definitely be maximized in this system. So I think he's worth just kind of like a tacit mention to. And I do think Bryce Young, he's not about to have a top five quarterback season, but he does fit the archetype of like a Jared Goff or a Tua who gets a change in coordinator and suddenly kind of gets like a new lease on quarterback life, right? I think that's potentially possible. You know, Deontay Johnson's not Tyreek Hill getting paired with Tua or anything like that, but he could be like Jared Goff's Robert Woods type of veteran receiver that just like you insert him in the offense and everything kind of calms down here. And again, I think we talked a lot about the Panthers on the last podcast with who could be this year's Texans. I do think it's just worth a tacit mention that Young, top five season, that's a lot to ask. We're simply asking that he looks like a viable NFL starter. But if he looks like a viable NFL starter and Deontay Johnson is kind of like the player that I think he is, and Xavier Leggett's good, and Dave Canales is where I kind of rank him pretty highly among potential offensive play callers, just worth mentioning that I think he has a little bit of a case here to this award.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning Carolina generally because they, this is an instant, and they had so far to go, and they haven't gotten all the way there. But we talked about it with Will Levis. You just like to see a team building around a young quarterback that like are really giving him tools. You know, like Deontay Johnson is a huge addition to the offense. I don't know that they've fixed the offensive line, but the offensive line should be better. They've added serious talent to it, and they have addressed a whole bunch of needs. And I think, you know, but Bryce Young has so far to go from where he was last year, because even in Superflex last year, he was the type of quarterback where you were like, should I just start a receiver here? You know, like, do I actually want to Superflex Bryce Young? Because there was just no, nothing there. No touchdowns there. As many interceptions as touchdowns, basically. And I think he's obviously in for a bump. But, you know, to what level? Because if you just get, you know, it'd be a huge leap for him to get to 22 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. And that's not really even that's a barely startable season in Superflex. Like, that's not great. But they have done some nice things. I think Derek Carr is the kind of guy who, if he just plays 17 games, can stumble into top 12 status. Like, we've seen that before. Like, yeah, I don't know. You look at the year-end quarterback ranks last year, and, you know, we talked about Trevor Lawrence every week in the panic meter, and he still finished as like the QB12 or something like that, because he just, just played. Yeah, you just make it to the end of the season, and like you play with good enough receivers.
Derek Carr was QB16 last year, 25 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. So like, again, the offense just a little bit better this year. That's totally possible.
Yeah, totally possible. And also, like, Derek Carr, you know, it was not lost on Derek Carr last year that he had Alvin Kamara at his disposal, and he, like, you know, sort of revived that receiving aspect of Alvin Kamara's career, and that was great too. Those are cheap and easy yards for him.
He probably needs to become a little less aware of Kamara, honestly, and more aware that you can throw the ball 15 yards down the field. Okay, so let's talk finalists here, Andy. I think we got a pretty good sense of this whole thing. We agreed Geno Smith definitely gets waved in. We need two more names here. I think I really like your Baker Mayfield analysis. I'm okay with making Baker a finalist, and I would personally push for Will Levis, but if you want to, the Watson stuff is kind of complicated, but I would personally vote for Will Levis. But if there's another name you want to put ahead of him, I'm okay with that.
I think it's more likely that Deshaun Watson gets, like, if we're actually talking top five, like somebody's got to squeeze into the top five. I think it's, I'm not saying it's likely for Deshaun, but I think it's a little bit more likely for Deshaun than it is for Will Levis. Will Levis would really, that would shock me.
All right. Well, you really harshen my vibe on this Will Levis thing, but I don't care that much. So our three finalists are Geno Smith, Baker Mayfield, and Deshaun Watson. Andy, I'm going to rank them first this time, because I always let the guests go first. And I just, you know, made you do a bunch of talking about the finalists. So I'm going to go ahead and rank this here. I think most least likely, I'm going to go Geno is most, I'll go him as the most likely. Then I will go Deshaun Watson. And the only reason I'm putting your boy Baker Mayfield at three is because he was QB 10 last year. And, you know, I think it's a little more, again, drafters and rankers are discounting him, but I think he's actually got he's coming off a better season than these other two guys, which, you know, it's all nebulous with these stupid, who is going to be this year's that, because Jordan Love obviously wasn't coming off a bad season. He just wasn't coming off of not playing. So that's my order, Andy. What is your order? Most to least likely?
Yeah, I'm, it's the same order. I think Geno Smith has to be at the top. We've seen it before. The receivers are great. Like and we've seen it recently too. It's not buried in the distant past like it is with Deshaun. I don't know that Deshaun can be that player again. I'm confident that Geno can be the player again that he was 2 years ago. Like that season can definitely happen. It's a loaded offense, at least in the receiving room. So I know it can happen with Geno. I don't know that it can happen with Deshaun, but it has happened before. I think Baker can sort of run back exactly what he did last year, but it doesn't put you in the top five. So if we're going to be like letter of the law here, and we really need to talk about somebody who can crack the top five at the position, Baker's number three for me.
Yeah. That little teeny tiny bit of rushing, upside or sprinkling on the top that Geno gives you is really kind of what makes the difference here between him and Baker for sure. And even a guy like Will Levis, as much as I wanted to put Levis in the top three here, he's not going to give you, I think, what Geno gives you as a runner. So, all right, there you have it. Geno Smith is this year's Jordan Love, a top five quarterback that nobody saw coming. I will say, Andy, I talked a lot on this show about learning from my mistakes with the Mayfield thing, the Daniel Jones thing. And what a hypocrite, because I was really into the Seahawks offense last year with these three receivers and Geno Smith, year two in the offense, and it did not go well. It was a disaster. But I think the hiring of Ryan Grubb, year two of Jackson Smith and Jigba being used more in like an intermediate way, Metcalf still in his prime, Lockett there. It feels like that feels like a man. We just missed that for kind of variance and circumstances and stuff like that. The Daniel Jones thing, that was stupid. I regret everything I said about that was just dumb. That was just a dumb thing to do. I think process on being high on the Seahawks offense was right last year. And I think that it can be actualized this year.
Yeah. Again, it might be a little bumpy because it's, you know, new system, new terminology, all that. Like September could get a little rough. And the offensive line is a huge question mark. Whether they did enough to address it, probably not. But Geno overcame that to a decent extent last year, and he's been like legit good the last couple of years. Not fluky good. Not just running into some crazy big plays or anything like that. Like he's made some really serious throws. So I have a fair amount of optimism for Geno, and I think he's actually, like, you're playing in a super flex league, I think he's a really good cheap target. Like,
yeah,
nobody's going to fight you for Geno in a salary cap draft, right? Like he's not going to cost an arm and a leg. He goes very late. And we've already seen a 30 touchdown season out of this guy with this cast of characters.
Yeah. I think that's the big thing here is one way or another, maybe he's not gonna be a top five quarterback, but we are interested in targeting Geno and this Seattle Seahawks offense. Mm-hmm. That is going to do it. Andy, appreciate you, buddy. This was a super fun episode, and we'll have to get you on again next year to try to find, like, you're a QB whisperer. So this is your new title here. Yeah, long time career at Yahoo, Andy Behrens. You're officially now our quarterback whisperer show. So shout out to you. Appreciate you doing this. Thank you all for listening. That is going to do it for today. We're going to be back on Thursday, continuing our Flip the Script series. This time we're going to be with Nate Tice looking at who's going to be this year's Rashad White, a.k.a. the king of the running back dead zone. That's going to be a great episode as well. Until then, we're out.